The Academy Award nominations have been announced, and several of the films up for major awards came out last summer, including Saving Private Ryan, The Truman Show, and Bullworth. No surprise, the most promoted film of last summer, Godzilla, is not nominated for Best Picture. Studios take in 65% to 75% of their annual revenues in the summer, but they don't usually release their most serious films then. My guest Peter Bard has written a new book about last summer's hits and misses and what they say about the state of Hollywood. The book is called The Gross. Bard is editor-in-chief at Variety and is a former film studio executive. I asked him what lessons from the summer of 97 studio execs may have applied to the summer of 98.
Well, I think the big lesson of 97 was that special effects per se wasn't going to do it. I mean, there was a very expensive picture, a sequel called Speed 2, that seemed to have everything going for it. It was a sequel. Sequels are supposed to be safe, had a lot of effects. That's supposed to be perfect for summer. And on, the trouble was, it was a lousy picture. And it its failure in summer 97 really shook up the front offices in Hollywood. No one's smart enough to know what's going to succeed. And that's why I think the central lesson of summer 97 and 98 was that the people who own the movie business in Hollywood basically don't like it. They're scared to death of it.
Are they losing money, too?
They're not making money. The film business as such is diseconomic in the sense that more studios lose money than make money from their live-action movies.
Well, I could see why the budgets are so big. Just the marketing and advertising budgets are so big.
That's correct. You know, when I actually was fortunate enough to spend some years as an executive for three different movie companies before I happily returned to journalism and went to Variety, of which I'm now the editor. But the risks that we used to take, say, in the early 70s, $2 million, $3 million, and even The Godfather cost about $7 million. There wasn't that much at stake. Plus, you opened a movie on three or four screens and spent a modest sum of money to launch it. You didn't have to mobilize a $60 or $70 million advertising campaign and open in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 theaters across the country. And that is... Those factors are the biggest risk inhibitors today.
Let's take a look at one of the movies that was supposed to be the big summer movie, Godzilla, and ended up doing very poorly, I think, at the box office. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, it did well by all normal standards. I mean, it could end up grossing well over $300 million around the world. Well over 300. So in just terms of raw bucks, it was a success, but it was hugely expensive to produce and to sell. And as a result, it was a disappointment because it didn't do the, quote, blockbuster business that Hollywood expects.
A lot of movie profits now, I'm sure, have to do with tie-ins, you know, free glasses or you know, other kind of little souvenirs that you get at fast food hamburger places or other little tie-ins that you can get T-shirts, mugs,
merchandising. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's the word, merchandising.
So you can't go to a Taco Bell without being given something.
Well, what were the merchandising tie-ins with Godzilla, and did that help the movie profit, or was that just more expense to worry about?
Well, the trick of most merchandise is that more than half the sales of the stuff move out of the stores before a picture opens. With Godzilla, there was such secrecy about the look of these little monsters that they didn't want to sell anything. They embargoed all this stuff until after the picture opened. And then the picture opened, and all the kids wandered into the stores. And Godzilla was, frankly, sort of prosaic looking. He looked like a fallout of Jurassic Park. There were okay little creatures. There was nothing to justify the spectacular hype that had gone into it. And again, it was just part of the big lesson of Godzilla, which may be sort of the ultimate Hollywood lesson of last year. That is that too much hype creates expectations that are self-defeating.
Was that the conclusion the studio reached, that there was too much hype about Godzilla and that hurt?
The studio really felt that they ended up getting almost carried away with themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're smart guys at Sony. There's a man named Bob Levin, who is the head of marketing, Jeff Blake, the head of distribution. And I know I ran into them in the weeks before Godzilla was to open, and they frankly admitted that they were concerned that there was too much being written about the marketing of Godzilla, the selling of Godzilla, and it was all becoming too self-conscious and too self-referential. And they were scared to death that they were going to end up stepping on their own toes, and they did.
Two studios last summer had comet crash movies. There was Armageddon and Deep Impact. As you point out in your book, movies sometimes seem to come in pairs, like Ants and A Bug's Life, or the two Wyatt Earp movies, or Outbreak and Crisis in the Hot Zone. What happened when two different studios realized that they were both doing comet crash movies?
It scared the hell out of them. It was they were terrified. And indeed, there were a lot of phone calls between them trying to intimidate the other into delaying or canceling because they were both hugely expensive pictures.
How do they go about trying to intimidate each other?
Well, phone calls are made to studio chief saying, look, we're going to be out first. You don't really want to compete with us, do you? And of course, in this case, they did want to compete with each other. And the movies were somewhat different in approach in the sense that Deep Impact was more akin to an old nuclear movie called On the Beach, made years ago by Stanley Kramer. Whereas Armageddon was more like The Dirty Dozen in space. So the rationale was, we've got the same basic premise, but the Deep Impact people, led by Steven Spielberg, felt they were going to make a much more thoughtful, humanistic movie. In the end, they made a slightly more thoughtful, humanistic movie.
Which did better at the box office?
Armageddon was a huge picture. It did about $500 million worldwide. But Deep Impact was a big hit.
Mm-hmm. And was opening first an advantage for Deep Impact?
It was a small advantage. Not that big a deal, actually.
My guest is Peter Bart, editor-in-chief of Variety and author of the new book, The Gross. It's about the films from last summer and how they did at the box office and why. You know, one of the movies you write about in your book, The Gross, is Saving Private Ryan, which was a huge success last summer and really kind of goes against the common wisdom that you can't do an agonizing, film for the summer. People want fun. Mm-hmm. And Saving Private Ryan was not a fun film. Did people try to discourage Spielberg from making that as a summer film?
Now, Steven has always sort of owned summer. Between films that he's directed and produced, every summer he's had 2, 3, 4 films that have just led the summer. And even this summer, if you examine, Spielberg, between all of his manifestations, basically had 4 films out, ranging from the frivolous, like Small Soldiers, to Saving Private Ryan, to Deep Impact, to Zorro. So he covers the landscape. He confessed to me, even before he made the picture, that he was worried about Ryan, that it wasn't a prototypical summer picture, that the ideal audience in summer consisted of young kids who probably never heard of World War II. He was also worried about the fact that he always liked to open pictures in late May, early June. This was the first time he went much later in summer. So he was really more nervous about this picture than anything he's done in many years. But did anybody try to talk him out? Nobody talks Steven Spielberg out of a caper like that. He's his own man. And by God, he stuck it to us. It was a brilliant movie, and it did huge business. Fortified by these Oscar nominations, it's going to do even more grandiose business.
You think that one of the lessons of 1998 is that the budgeting for special effects films is really out of control. How is that being registered inside the movie industry? Did executives talk to you about that?
I think everything about special effects is out of control. They always go over budget. and they're always late. I mean, almost all of the movies of this summer, like Armageddon and Godzilla, that were big effects movies, were finished like the day before the release date. So all the things that movies that need to be done to movies, the caressing of them, the testing of them, the cutting and the honing down, none of that could be done. So you do have a kind of tyranny setting in. And that's why when you see many special effects movies, they tend to be too long, they tend to be too noisy, they tend to be badly edited. And the reason is that they're always shooting the release date, as they say in Hollywood. They're always running right up against D-Day. It's a terrible way to live.
So is there an attempt being made to rein in the special effects?
There's an attempt to be being made to schedule special effects movies with a flexible release date so that, mindful of the fact that with George Lucas, look at the way George Lucas makes the sequels to his prequels to Star Wars. I mean, he's in control of the release date, and he's given himself an extra year to finish his picture. He's not being pushed because he owns the negative and he's in control.
I'm wondering if there's any kind of new common wisdom about demographics, about film audiences, who goes to see movies. Teen comedies are obviously really big now. Is that where the money is in teenage moviegoers?
Well, I get sort of irritated about this point because, sure, the studios look at the demographics and say the fastest growing audience consists of kids. Therefore, even last week, Disney said many, many more of our pictures are going to be aimed at teen audiences and at the family audience. But on the other hand, there is another growing demographic that is sort of being ignored, and that is there are a lot of couples in their 30s and 40s who are still single or single again, or actually husbands and wives, that ultimate rarity who go out with each other on a date. There's an enormous number of people like that who would really like to see somewhat more serious pictures or more character-driven pictures or more pictures such as emerged from the 60s and 70s. And that demographic somehow has been subsumed beneath the teenage rage. And I think that the studios are going to come to grief on this because, you know, that teen audience is very picky, very choosy. You can't predict their tastes. And the sort of machine-tooled, assembly-line pictures that are coming out now aimed at exploiting the teen audience, they ain't going to work.
So you think the movie industry will rethink its emphasis on teenage moviegoers?
I think that there's going to be a tough year ahead in terms of pandering to teens.
Okay. Well, Peter Bart, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
Peter Bart's new book is called The Gross. This is Fresh Air.